Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We continue our series with our National Conference presenters, and with me today is quarterback guru Will Hewlett. Will, it's always great to talk ball with you.
Man, I appreciate you having me on, man. Keith, it's been great season and starting the off season, and it's good to get back in the swing of things. Thanks for having me, for sure.
Will, I know you study a lot of games, you study game film, you go out and you watch guys. So looking back on this 2017 season, talk to me a little bit about some of the things you're seeing that maybe you think coaches need a little help with out there, or things that you think you've learned through the course of a season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a pretty amazing year. I'm observing both the college and NFL seasons. I think we've learned some things, especially with the recent national championship. You know, you're looking how a backup quarterback comes into a game and leads them to victory that hasn't been a starter all year. And you've got guys like Case Keenum and Jared Goff both being on the same team in the previous season and now leading their teams to the playoffs in the 2017 year. Certainly, there's some things that stand out in terms of the quarterback scouting and development side that raised a lot of questions in my mind and I think probably a lot of other people's minds. So as far as what I've learned from it, I think as we kind of understand the role of quarterback development in terms of the physical parts of the game and, you know, the development and throwing mechanics and that side of it, it goes to show, you know, making sure you're partnered with the right coach and the right offensive scheme really matters a whole heck of a lot too. I mean, you know, I don't know that anyone could have predicted Case Keenum's success. And it just goes to show with him and Goff, with McVay out there with the Rams, you know, just really tearing it up, you know, how much that partnership matters between coach and quarterback. And you know, and then the Alabama system where you got a kid that comes in that, you know, took mostly snaps that didn't matter a whole heck of a lot, but then comes into the national championship and leads his team to victory on the national stage. Again, being in a great system and then being able to, you know, really take advantage of the skill sets these guys bring to the table. So those were some really interesting things, I think, on everyone's mind after this previous season kind of wrapped up.
Yeah, the national championship obviously is a very compelling story. And you think of that situation, it's not just like he came into a game, he came into the game. And not, you know, yes, coming in because of an injury at a game that's close, he came and brought the team, rallied the team back from behind, and executes in overtime, yep, with an amazing throw. We can obviously, not being a part of that program, just guess about some of the things that go on to prepare a guy. But, you know, in your estimation, what is it that you're able to build a guy to that level of confidence to step into a game like that?
Well, I think the thing, you know, and I've kind of observed it from afar with Tua and Jalen Hurts and maybe the Alabama system and being an outsider, but really understanding kind of the development track of a lot of these quarterbacks that end up at these schools and, you know, seeing a kid like that kind of jump onto the scene. And for some people, it was a surprise, but, you know, tracking the Tua kid through high school, there were some things that were really evident on film in terms of his ability to, he was a kid that, you know, as a high school junior and senior, you could tell that he had all the college physical skills down. I mean, the arm strength and the accuracy was all there. And then see a level of maturity to be able to step into that situation and lead the team. I think the argument would be, you know, that Alabama is kind of a unique situation when you play quarterback there because, you know, in some programs, the quarterback is, you know, maybe a little bit of a smaller piece of the puzzle in when they're playing a lesser opponent, you know. So for Alabama, that's generally everyone they play. The QB maybe not as big a factor in moving the chains. But you know, I always had kind of a feeling that Jalen Hurts was, you know, a fantastic leader and a great athlete, but limited in his accuracy as a thrower. And so a guy like Tua, you know, with that explosive ability and accuracy, would probably slot in really, really well in that situation, and obviously have the maturity and the preparation from his high school experience, and you know, his influence from his, you know, his father, his high school coach, to be really prepared for that level. But to step onto the stage, I think he had the skill set to do it, and maybe the mystique of Alabama, you know, pumped Jalen Hurts maybe a little than he should be. And so it's kind of set up really perfectly for a kid like that to jump in and make plays. In Georgia's defense, you know, how much real film did they have on Tua to prepare for him as well? And I think that's one of the things you got to take into, you know, it's kind of the Ohio State factor with the 12 gauge, the big quarterback years ago that stepped in there. Cardale Jones, you know, it's like, okay, you know, he played three games, so it was hard for him, you know, hard for the opposition to really understand what they were getting into. So maybe six games into next season, if Tua is the starter, the teams will be a little bit more prepared and he won't be able to sneak up on anyone anymore. So that's, I think, a factor that plays into it for sure.
Taking a look at, you know, I know you've always been big on the character side of it too. Now, you know, on the flip side of this and what we've been able to see in the interviews and everything after the game, talk to me a little bit about what we can learn from Jalen Hurts in this process and what a young quarterback can learn from that lesson.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I think it's been a huge talking point for a lot of coaches. It's like, you know, this is what you want your kids to be like. And, you know, with kind of the position that a lot of young men are in right now with social media and instant gratification and almost that, you know, the me culture of committing and announcing offers. It's really refreshing to see a young man to lose your job, to have your ego crushed on national television and to react that way is an unbelievable display of character and, you know, shows what kind of upbringing he had with his parents and the culture that's spread through, you know, his high school team and Alabama. Again, I don't think we can replay it enough to show that that's what it's all about. A guy that's completely unselfish and wants the best for the team. You know, I think hopefully more kids get exposed to that and kind of say it's not about them, it's about the team. And Jalen's going to have success no matter what. I mean, he, you know, whatever it is in life, I think with that kind of attitude, you'll see it trickle over into his, you know, next venture, whether that's another football team or who knows, you know, the same thing happens week six next year. If Tua is the starter, he jumps in and takes him to the next championship and wins. So you don't know how that's going to pan out, but definitely the way you want your players to be prepared.
And for the high school coach out there, you know, a lot of times we only have the one guy, but we do have those situations. We got to make a tough decision and put a guy into the game or name one guy the starter.
Yeah.
What tips do you have for coaches out there who have to kind of prepare their guys for that, to develop them maybe through the course of, you know, spring and camp and getting into the season? How do you prepare one guy to take the job and the other to support him and do everything he needs to do as a teammate?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that play into that. I think up front, I mean, initially, you know, when you're selecting that guy, you know, I think one of the best practices for coaches is to pick the guy that is the guy and not the guy that you want to be the guy. And to expand on that point, it's like sometimes, you know, we get really caught up in what someone can be, you know, and maybe it's the 6'5" pro style D1 projected quarterback that, man, I really want this kid to be the guy because of the upside. But then that's your 5'11", you know, gritty make play leader that really deserves to be the quarterback. And so making sure you're picking the one that really is the best fit for your team and not the one that projects out to be something that they may not ever be. I think that really matters. And then I think for coaches, I mean, you know, when I talk to players, the number one thing I think people have a problem with, and athletes specifically, is not knowing where they stand. And so I think honesty up front is always the best way to handle it. And not everyone's going to like that. But I think you've got to let the kids know where they stand in terms of a competition and where they fit. And, you know, telling a kid you've got to get better at your footwork is really not great feedback to help them win the starting job. when sometimes it's really, hey, man, you're just not skilled enough for this position, and you're really suited to be a backup. And the risk there for a high school coach is you're going to lose that guy, and you might need him later on, but you're not going to keep that guy anyway if you string him along and then never follow through on it. So I think honesty has always been much appreciated. Maybe up front, never really liked, but that's, I think, the best approach when selecting and preparing a guy. And then let him, got to let guys compete. Got to let it play out on the field. And you got the T-shirt All-Americans that certainly show themselves as a projected starter, looks good when there's no pressure. But the kid that really rallies the team when there is pressure is probably the one you want on the field on after taking a sack on first down and having a second and 18 on overtime. That's the guy you want on the field that's gonna rip the seam for the touchdown. Those would be the areas that I would focus on as a coach.
Well, one of the things really that's impressed me about you as a quarterback coach is kind of your willingness to continue to learn and develop and innovate. And I've seen that change in you over the course of time that I've known you, wherein some guys they get their routine down and they stick with it and live and die by it. And I think you get yourself involved in some interesting things. One of those you mentioned being the quarterback collective. And talk to us a little bit about you know your learning and what you're doing to develop yourself as a coach.
Yeah. So I think one of the areas that's helped me the most is just living by the motto or it's always be a student. And that when you stop being a student, you definitely stop learning, you stop growing, and you become stagnant. And I think one of the other things I always talk about is we have this expectation for our athletes to continue to improve in the off season and push. And I find it the same expectation for coaches. And, watching, successful coaches over the years, like, the Alan Trimbles and Coach Jones over at Greenwood, Arkansas, just go back to the drawing board every year and find a better way to do things really resonated with me early on as a coach. And so my goal is to continually evaluate everything I do as a coach and see if there's a better way. Now, the toughest thing about this is that you've got to kind of put your ego to the side and understand that what I coached a kid to do last year might have not been the best way to do it. And I think a lot of, young coaches and maybe old coaches for that matter struggle with having to reposition themselves and saying, I was wrong. There's a better way to do it. And so I continue to try to be involved in as many quarterback development companies and be around coaches as much as possible. And the QB Collective is a really neat group of individuals with, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan as two of kind of the headliners, and guys like Rich Bartel and, other Sage Rosenfeld, so the guys that have had experience from areas that I haven't been exposed to has really helped me kind of continually learn the position, the things about the quarterback position that make it work. And then on the flip side of it, you go kind of to the movement side, understanding, movement strategies from guys like Rob Williams with SportCore and other companies out there have been really helpful, really understanding how the body works truly from a kinesiology standpoint. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my process, just always be a student and expose yourself to as many people as possible. And some of it's good and some of it's not. I mean, I think you have to have a filter and understand, everyone out there has maybe got an opinion, but really understanding who've gone through the whys and how, continually learn, that's really helped me.
Yeah, I think the movement perspective is an interesting one. It's kind of one I got focused on throughout the season. I had a movement coach who does a lot of work with NFL players specifically. He's located in Minnesota, so the Vikings. And, we talked quite a bit. He was on the podcast once, and then I had him join me throughout the season, at least half the season, naming, the NFL player movement of the week. And, we would break down this movement, look at all the different aspects that are involved in it, and then kind of bring that into a coaching perspective too, because it's not all, once we hit the season, we can't just be in, agility or reactive agility drills or movement drills. We have to build it into what we're doing in practice. And it opened my eyes to maybe getting out of the everyday drill mentality and doing things kind of in a very programmed way, and started, looking at how do we mimic kind of, chaotic environments that players have to perform in.
I think you've hit it on the head there. And I think you know, there's levels of development that all positions go through, you know, quarterback, receiver, defensive lineman, and some things that need to be controlled when you're trying to change maybe a, you know, a very specific movement strategy. But the reality is this game is played in a completely chaotic environment. And so we need to replicate that in a manner in our training that will help translate to the field. And I think different learning strategies working through both, you know, randomized drills where, the, you know, you're creating true situations where guys have to react to different stimuluses that they can't predict for, you know, they can't guess on what's going to happen. And then I think there's also a balance of still the everyday drill doesn't go away, but it can't be the only thing you do, because the creativity that you have to have as a player, especially on the quarterback side, you know, stuff that you got to continually let your guys explore and learn. You know, it's almost like you always hear about the quarterbacks that have the, you know, they play it like they're playing backyard football, the guys like the Baker Mayfields and Brett Favre's of the world that always make plays. And I think a lot of that is making sure that at some point you got to leave the cuffs off and let them feel their way through some things. And I think you can create those scenarios in practice and, you know, trainings to allow guys to really know what they're capable of, instead of always coaching in this very specific box. You know, this is how it has to be every single time. I think sometimes we overdo that and you kind of handcuff athletes, you're not letting them really be who they are. And I think that's the beauty of some of the guys that really excel on the highest level out there. It's the coach kind of just lets them go, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a balance between that and giving critical feedback, I think, that everyone can benefit from.
One last question for you before we talk about, you know, your presentation, yeah, what you're doing at a national conference. And we're projecting, yeah, ahead a little bit, but looking at this year's, yep, crop of quarterbacks, at least at, yeah, this point in January, what guys, mm-hmm, or guy or guys is at the top of the list for you and why?
Yeah, I think for me, the ones that have always stood out take pride in discovering the Josh Allen in my world very, very early, two seasons ago, going through some Boise State film. And I was like, who's this Wyoming kid? It was like week two of the 2016 film season. And he definitely stood out as a guy that had skills that I mean, he jumped off the screen. But I think the top guy coming out this year for the NFL is Josh Rosen. I think from just a ready to play standpoint, he really stood out to me as a guy. I watched every single game he played this year. You know, his ability to anticipate and throw the ball over the middle between the hashes with accuracy, to the point where it's like he would make throws that were in such small windows that it would scare me watching film. That really stood out as something. And the guy's toughness and intelligence really, you know, resonated with me. I know he's got kind of a rap for some arrogance and stuff, but I really felt a lot of that was just misinterpreted. And part of that's his fault, and part of it's other people's fault. And so he's a guy that really stands out. I think the creativity of Sam Darnold is really intriguing, and his upside might be the largest out of everyone. You know, I think he's similar to Jameis Winston in terms of, you know, some of the throws that he made, you kind of scratch your head and be like, what did you do there? And then he'll make a very similar throw and then pull the game off with that. So just, I think it really matters what team he lands with and what coach he lands with will help that one out. And I think Baker Mayfield, I think, is really intriguing to me as an NFL prospect. And then most notably, I think people are going to be like, well, you know, what about the height? And I think you look at it, well, if it was 6'4", would anyone have any questions about his ability? I think some of the things we want to see from Mayfield are, you know, whatever offense he ends up in the NFL, just his ability to move through a standard progression, you know, how he fits into the system. No doubt his playmaking ability is unquestioned, and those things are awesome. But I think, you know, part of the luck of being, you know, where you drafted and what guy you're with, as per watching Jared Goff last year, you know, seeing what a difference two coaches make in a guy's development. I think a lot of that holds true for the next group of guys. So, yeah, the form we're talking about, but I think Rosen's the one that's ready to go. Most intrigued by Mayfield, and physically, I think Allen is gifted. And I like Lamar Jackson, and I think, you know, people are, you know, maybe a little bit protective of him as a quarterback, being that he's so athletic. You know, a lot of people may, you know, why can't he be successful? And I think the way I always look at it is, like, if you look at the guys that are having the most success today in the NFL, they're not necessarily the most athletic. And so if you take away Lamar Jackson's athleticism, you know, does he match up as an NFL quarterback? I think some of his plays in the pocket show that he can certainly be that. And I guess the argument would be made that, well, he is that athletic and he can make those plays, but I haven't seen a guy make it through an NFL season as a running quarterback consistently. So we'll see how he projects out. I think he's got definitely a shot, and his, you know, statistics and play speaks for itself, but the NFL is a different beast, and that's kind of the equalizer in quarterback play. So we'll see how that one goes.
So coach, the follow-up to that one is, knowing that the number one pick belongs to the Cleveland Browns, and they may or may not be looking for a quarterback in this draft. Going back to what you said before, that, you know, it's kind of about getting in the, you know, the right guy with the right coach and the right system.
Yeah.
Who best fits in that spot of the guys you mentioned, or maybe it's a guy you hadn't mentioned yet?
That's a tough one, man. I mean, I feel bad. I feel like going to the Browns has been kind of a tough deal for a lot of quarterbacks, obviously, with their turnover in so many years. So you've got to look at it like a guy like Lamar Jackson would probably have some early success because of his athleticism. But, you know, you can look at RG3 too, you know, with how he played out in Washington, and he had early success as well. But then when the athleticism was taken away, you know, it was a little bit tougher for him. So the most NFL-ready guy in my mind is Josh Rosen. So he's probably the best fit right away to step into that situation and make a difference. And as long as he's got the backing, you know, with the right coaches, I think, you know, it could have some success there for sure. But it might boil down to more, you know, on the ownership and GM side of with the Browns than it does with whoever they select, which is unfortunate. But hopefully whoever goes there gets a supporting cast and they can kind of build on it.
Yeah, it's important to me. I was a season ticket holder this past year, so we're looking for something here. And we have, obviously, growing up in Cleveland, we've got that long, tremendously long list of quarterbacks who've been here since we came, you know, brought the team back in '99. You feel for a guy who's got to step into that role, but at some point you think it's got to come together for Cleveland.
I think it will. I mean, and I think they shy away from a guy like Baker because the argument could be made that he kind of fits the Johnny Manziel mold, although I think there's some pretty substantial differences, but it's easy to make that kind of call where they're similar guys. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've had a guy truly like, you know, Josh Rosen or Darnold. You know, and Darnold's played on, you know, UCLA, you know, hasn't had the best supporting talent, and he's a guy that's taken a bunch of punishment and made plays and stood in there. And I truly believe without Rosen this past year, UCLA probably would have lost a whole lot more games. So maybe he's the guy for it. But I don't think if they pick Darnold, I don't think that's a bad thing either. You know, I don't think you can go wrong with both of those guys. It's just a matter of preference. But if I was going to back one, I'd back Rosen right now. Ask me this question years from now, my opinion is probably completely different.
Well, I hope we have one who settles in and is with us for a long time. And I think, you know, the supporting cast is just young. But we'll see. I mean, obviously the ownership believes in Hugh Jackson, that they bring him back for a third year. And I do think it's important to have some consistency in that culture. So we'll see what happens. But,
I do.
You know, moving ahead, talking about a little bit about what you're going to be presenting about or on the field at our USA Football National Conference. We're excited to have you there, Coach. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to see.
You know, my goal for the conference is to give coaches some really good tools that they can use right now in the off season, and then, you know, things that'll make their quarterbacks better right away from an evaluation standpoint and a coaching standpoint. I think the position itself, the mechanical side, can get so confusing and overwhelming for players. And, you know, so I want to make sure that I deliver a very simple and replicable method of coaching that'll allow these guys to, you know, really maximize their time and get the most out of a quarterback. So I'm going to give a couple simple strategies, you know, on a starting and finish positions, and some areas that to not overcoach and not undercoach, and some common coaching errors that you see in quarterback coaching that maybe restrict their quarterback's play, but also give some good, you know, solid guidelines that allow guys to really, you know, help their cues develop and be consistent. I think the big thing for high school or youth coaches is you want to know what you're getting when the ball snaps. There's nothing worse than having, inconsistency at the quarterback position. You know, it's not even about having the most talented guy. It's about having a guy that's the same every single time, and then we can structure our offense around that. So hope to really help them provide some strategies to lock that in for them so they can really get better.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Again, it's January 26th awesome. Through 28th in Orlando. They'll have a chance yep. to register for that for coaches out there at usafootball.com and go to our events tab. Coach, it was great to have you back on the podcast again. I'm looking forward to seeing you here at the end of the month.
Awesome. I appreciate the time, Keith, and we'll be looking forward to catching up in Orlando. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.